Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. School report cards were officially released last week. They measure how well schools and districts are educating our students. Or do they? Joining us to talk about the report cards, how they're calculated, and what they're supposed to mean to us is Janine Molak. She is Director of Accountability in the Ohio Department of Education. Welcome and thanks for joining us, Janine.
Thank you for having me, Ann.
To our listeners, our question to you today is if your school has improved in the ratings. So first of all, if your school has improved in the ratings, have you noticed that your child is getting a better education? And do the ratings even matter to you? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Coming up, we'll have a couple of superintendents, one from Worthington City Schools and the other from Groveport-Madison City Schools. If you want to save your questions or comments for them, you're welcome to do that as well, 614-292-8513. Janine Molak, Ohio schools appeared to be making headway. More school districts and individual schools earned an A or A plus, or at least that's how people in the lay vernacular. I know it's a little different where you work. How does the state assess what factors were at play in the success? How do you figure, how do you use this information at the state level?
Well, first, I want to say the overall accountability system is comprised of four different components, and each component is used to tell a different piece of how students in our schools and our districts are performing. So with that, and we also have a measure that looks at highly qualified teachers and looks to see if the schools are being populated with those. And then we look at how the students are performing on tests in grades 3 through 8, in grades 10, and a cumulative for grade 11. We also look at the attendance and the graduation rate. Together, we use these four components and we come up with the overall rating for schools and districts.
And the rating is used to qualify for federal benefits.
The actual overall rating is for state purposes.
And what does the state do with it?
A lot of times we look to see where we can identify or target resources for schools that are persistently low performing. We have support that goes out to the field so that when we see that schools are persistently low performing, we try to help them develop a improvement plan so that they can try to get on track to help ensure that their students are meeting the standards that we've set.
My guest is Janine Molak. She's Director of Accountability in the Ohio Department of Education. If you have a question or comment for her, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So when you're looking at the information that you get every year, and how do you figure out what leads to success? In other words, how do you assess the factors that were at play in any given district success? We're going to have Groveport-Madison City School Superintendent Scott McKenzie on in the next segment, and they've made great leaps and bounds in the last 4 or 5 years. How do you look at that information and figure out what helped, what got them there?
A lot of times it's difficult to equate what is going on in the classroom specifically to a change in a value, let's say. So what we try to do overall is to see, what are our trends saying? Do we see that in third grade, the students are performing better over the last few years in reading, for example, or in a certain subject area? And then we look to see once they're in, for instances where their students are not performing, we try to do more and provide more diagnostic information, which really looks at performance on the actual assessments to see where the students' weak areas are, how they may target their instruction to address those weak areas to bring those students back to on track.
And grades are assigned based on test scores. The attendance and the graduation rates and improvement from one year to the next. What's the biggest stumbling block for most districts, or are there any patterns you can talk about in terms of what trips up districts?
You mean their overall performance? Mm-hmm. What we found across the state is for the last few years that the fifth grade seems to be a challenging year. We are still working with you know, teachers to try to figure out what is going on. We know that that's a critical year where they're transitioning to middle school. And so the expectations, we believe, are being increased at that age to prepare them for their transition to middle school. So in those subjects for fifth grade, we found that the students seem to be struggling across the board for those subjects, and they seem to be the lower performing of the indicators that we have on the report card.
In Georgia, investigators have uncovered widespread cheating in the Atlanta district, cheating by teachers and administrators who are changing answers on tests. Apparently, they even had cheating parties, I guess. The pressure came from apparently the each individual building's report cards. They were being, their feet were to the fire, and there was a lot of pressure put on them to achieve, even if it was at the expense of the students. How do you check at the state level to make sure that everybody's playing by the rules?
Well, there are several ways that we check. First, for our state assessments, we do work with the vendor, and they run an analysis, an erasure analysis, that looks to see if there's unusual patterns of erasures on the assessments, and would flag if we found that a school or a district had an unusual pattern outside of what we see in the state for erasures. And that would could suggest that, depending on the pattern, for example, if it went, a lot of the wrong answers went to right answers, that would be a key flag that something happened. If they all went to the same answer, it would suggest that cheating might have occurred. In the state of Ohio, we have the ability to, with our, it's in law, Ohio law, that we can, it's about data integrity. So districts can be, we can open an investigation. The State Board of Education has the latitude to invalidate the test results. There are sanctions that could occur for schools and districts that are determined to have been found intentionally changing or misrepresenting their data.
In Georgia, the testing company kept the erasure data just for their own purposes. It wasn't something that was required by the state. Why? It's different in Ohio?
Yes, this is part
of... It's
a
public record then?
I'm not certain if it's a public record.
Okay.
I know it's information that the test vendor collects. I apologize.
And that the state uses it?
Yes, we do. We do. Our Office of Assessment does review the data. Actually, we have a team that will come in to see if we see extreme. We also have, in Ohio, the Technical Advisory Committee that advises our assessments. And we have some experts that help to sit on the review of the erasure analyses.
614-292-8513. My guest is Janine Molak. She is with the Ohio Department of Education. She's the Director of Accountability there. We're talking about district and building grades. They get graded too now. You probably know about that, but do you know what it means? If you want to know more about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page if you want to do it that way. Janine, you were instrumental in helping the State Department of Education implement a value-added dimension to the accountability system. How is value-added computed?
We actually send it out to our to a vendor to do the analyses. But essentially what value-added does, and I tend to be very technical, so I'll try not to be.
If I get that, you know, deer in the headlights look, you know.
Essentially, what value added does it is it looks at students' prior test performance. It's a similar methodology that econometrics use when they do forecasting. And so what we're looking to see is, based on a student's the composite of their test history, do we see that they're making progress from one year to the next. The measure actually is computed for, we don't look at the student level, we're actually looking at groups of students, either within a grade or within a subject, and at the building level and then also at the district level. So again, the goal is we look at a statewide movement of progress, and we compare districts and schools to that statewide movement. So we have three categories. one, which is the goal that you've met, 1 year of growth in 1 year of time. So your students are essentially progressing as they should. Then there is the exceeded or above, which means you've made more than a year of growth in a year of time. And then there's below, which means that you fail to meet a year of growth in a year of time. So what we find is that we're, as our assessments look at a point in time and measurement. So they look at how a student did on a particular day, on a particular test, and a particular subject. The value-added measure looks at progress. So it looks to see if a student is making some gain in their performance when compared to the previous year.
So even if you start about behind the eight ball, you started out behind the year before, what you're looking at isn't to necessarily see if they're grade level or above, but to see if they've made progress from where they started.
Sorry.
That's okay.
That's actually a good way to look at it, that we are looking to see, even if you're behind and you've made progress. So for those schools and districts that are serving students that are below the proficiency level, it could be the case that they've made some significant improvement over a year of time, even though the students haven't met the minimum proficiency target.
How are things weighted between these four factors? What's the weight? Is value added weighted heavier than others, or how does that work?
Well, I will say each one contributes a portion. So when you look at the overall system, how we compute the overall rating is we look at the higher between the number of indicators met, and again, that's the performance on the assessments in grades 3 through 8, 10 and 11, attendance and graduation. We also look, we take that, the higher between that and the performance index. The performance index is a component that also is intended to look at the movement in the assessment. So really the way it's intended or designed is that it gives greater weight to those students who are moving from below the proficiency target to proficient. And then we look at the higher of the two of those. Then the next thing we do is we factor in adequate yearly progress. That is the one component that is a federal component of our state accountability system that also can influence the ratings. And then finally, value added. When you talk about the weighting of the components, I would probably say that it's interpreted that value added has a weight and AYP has a weight in that both can impact the ratings.
If a school or if a building or a district is not progressing and it's stagnated at, say, a C or a D, which there are plenty of them that have been and are, what happens? What's the state's role at that point?
Well, I will say the state does have the latitude to convene an academic distress commission for those districts that are persistently low performing. That's our lowest category, which is academic emergency. And the commission then goes in and helps to work with the district to turn the district around. When you talk about the performance at, which is continuous improvement or academic watch, the state usually, again, this is goes back to our support teams. We have teams that go out to support schools and districts to help them come up with an improvement plan to ensure that all their students are performing appropriately.
My guest is Janine Molak. She's with the Ohio Department of Education. She's their Director of Accountability. She's going to join us later on in the program to talk about how we count graduation, how we count dropouts, I should say, in the state of Ohio. So stay with us for that. Coming up, Scott McKenzie, he's superintendent of the Groveport Madison City Schools, and also Dr. Thomas Tucker of Worthington City Schools. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
In the movies, a witness IDs the crime suspect and case closed. In real life, those witnesses are often wrong. Dallas Police Lieutenant David Pughes.
We don't just say, okay, they pointed to this picture and says this is the person that did it, so we're going to put him in jail.
I'm Rebecca Roberts, rethinking eyewitness testimony next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon at 2 on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. Be sure to join us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. for Political Correctness, Run Amok. The guest will be Juan Williams, author and Fox News analyst. Join us for that on All Sides tomorrow morning at 10. 65 degrees in downtown Columbus. Partly cloudy skies right now, becoming sunny later today with a high of 78. Clear skies tonight and a low of 57. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about school report cards, district report cards. What do they mean? Joining us now is Worthington City School Superintendent Dr. Thomas Tucker. The last time he was with us, he was superintendent of the Licking Heights Local School District. You've also been administrator in Hilliard City Schools, and you've taught in the classroom, been a principal and curriculum director in Kansas as well as Ohio. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
Also joining us is Groveport-Madison School Superintendent Scott McKenzie. Scott, he started his career in the classroom as well. He's been the superintendent there since 2006. He's also been a guidance counselor, elementary school principal, business manager, curriculum director, and pupil services director there. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
Groveport-Madison has had some good news. The district was designated excellent by the Ohio Department of Education for the 2010-11 school year, and that's after 2 years of being labeled effective, and before that on continuous improvement and academic watch in the previous school year. So, yeah. Yay, Groveport-Madison.
Yeah, we're really, really excited and really pleased with the steady growth that we've made over the years. As you mentioned, in 2004-2005, we were in academic watch, and a few years after that, we climbed to continuous improvement. Then the last couple of years, we've been effective. And now this year, we have garnered the excellent rating. And everyone in Groveport-Madison is proud of that and excited as well.
So you started as superintendent in 2006. It was a year after that kind of low point.
Right.
What does a superintendent bring to the equation? When you start there, what do you do to bring about change? A lot of you were in the district for long enough to know that there was a lot of set ways.
Yeah, actually, I could say everything and nothing. We set the tone. We set the direction of the school district, and then we let the staff and the teachers and the students take over and work really, really hard. And that's really what happened in Groveport-Madison. We looked at our standards, we aligned our curriculum. We have made some textbook adoptions over the years, and then basically every year the teachers and the students have been working hard and grinding it out in the classroom on a day-to-day basis and have made that steady progress, that steady growth.
When you say align to the curriculum, align the curriculum, is that code for teaching to the test?
Actually, the state has standards, and we need to try to align our curriculum to those standards. Obviously, that is what is on the test. But, you teach a lot more than just rote memory type things these days, critical thinking skills and collaboration and that kind of stuff. So all that is in the core curriculum from the state, and they actually look at the nation. So, it's all kind of melded in there a little bit together.
Do you feel like the kids that are coming out of your high school now, the kids that are graduating from Groveport-Madison, are better educated? And if so, and I'm sure you're not going to say no, but yeah. I'm going to assume you're going to say yes. And if so, what is it about them that, besides the test scores, it makes you feel like they're better prepared?
Yeah, I think I would hope that they are. Let me put it that way. And, we have to grow students that are 21st century learners that can go out into the job market now and have those types of skills that businesses are looking for. And so that's what I think is the real benchmark for success these days. And hopefully our Groveport-Madison students are there.
Thomas Tucker, at Worthington, you just started.
Yes.
So you can't take any credit. You can't take any blame at this point. But when you do come into a school district, you're where Scott McKenzie was back in 2006. You're starting out fresh, although Scott had been with the district for a while. He was more familiar with it. You come in, it's excellent without distinction at Worthington. People want with distinction. They want the A+. What do you tell them?
That is quite capable. And I want to preface my comments that I'll make here a little later on with this fact here. We certainly believe that high achievement on the state assessments is very important, but also students being excited about learning. And that was one of the biggest reasons that I came to Worthington, to come to a place where students were achieving very high, but also excited about learning, because it's not all about the test. And when kids are excited, we'll reach the excellent with distinction. We really don't have much doubt about that. I have outstanding teachers, outstanding administrators, and certainly outstanding students with a very supportive board and community.
So with distinction, what's the with distinction part of it?
Dr. Moloch started the conversation off talking about value added. And we did not surpass our value added measure. As she stated, when you look at it, you either surpass it or exceed it, you meet it or you are below. And we met it. Although we had a 103.1 performance index, the highest ever, and we have 17 schools in our district that have report cards. 12 of the 17 schools had a performance index score of 100 or higher. It's sort of like the benchmark that the state wants you to reach. The other five schools had performance index scores of 94 or higher, so in the mid-90s. So we're certainly happy that we are moving more and more students to higher levels of achievement. We just need to get that extra bump, and I certainly experienced that in Licking Heights. It was a place that I'd come in. Had only been rated continuously improvement was the highest rating we had. Because we worked hard, we met AYP, we exceeded the growth measure, we were bumped up to excellent for the first time. And I'm happy when I left the district, we were rated excellent as well. And we'll take care of what we need to take care of here in the Worthington City School District.
My guests are Scott McKenzie of Groveport Madison City Schools, where he's superintendent, and also Dr. Thomas Tucker of Worthington City Schools, where he is superintendent, brand new superintendent. If you have a question or comment for either of them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What made the difference when you look back, Scott McKenzie in Groveport Madison? What was the tipping point that you think made a difference? Was it a different class of students? Because, you know, you have a whole other 4 years coming up now.
Right. Well, as far as on the test, I can say that our performance index has grown, and we reached into the 90s. We're actually at 91.7 performance index, which is not, you know, the highest, but yet that brought us, you know, that did real well. We started out at 79 in 2004-2005. We met 13 out of 26 indicators. That's 50%. Again, we've got a long way to go there, but that is the best that we have done. And we have met value added every year for the last 4 years and actually exceeded that. We've gotten the above rating every year for 4 years. So, but as far as preparing the children, I think what we've tried to do is look at them as the whole child and not just look at academics. We started an all-day kindergarten program 4 years ago. So those students were third graders, and our third graders for the first time when they took the test. And we did meet all the indicators in the third grade. So we think that had something to do with it. Our kindergarten readiness scores are some of the lowest in the county.
Meaning they're starting out behind.
Right. Yeah. So we needed to catch them up. We started an all-day, every school now has breakfast, and I think lots of school districts do that now, but mm-hmm. we started that a few years ago, so we look at the health of our students and fitness levels as well. So I think, we've looked at trying to get our kids ready to learn as well as the academic piece.
Now, all-day kindergarten, that's been an option in Worthington City Schools, but the funding, it's very expensive. Is it going to continue, or is that something that parents have been paying for in Worthington City Schools?
Parents have been paying for all-day kindergarten, yes, and it's something that we certainly hope that will continue. When you look at districts that have made tremendous academic growth, as Scott just pointed out, all day, every day kindergarten seems to be one of those indicators.
But it's expensive. It's got to be expensive for Groveport Madison to do that. Do parents pay for it?
No.
It's mandatory then?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. Every student attends all-day kindergarten. Right. So that's just something that our Board of Education decided was important to do. And so we're paying for that.
614-292-8513. That's the number to call. They're just going to be with us for about another 8 minutes. So if you have a question, don't wait. Give us a call or go on to email at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook. And if you would like to tweet, you can do that too, at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Did your district rely, does Groveport Madison rely on any of the federal grant money from the stimulus?
We are a race to the top district. The stimulus money went away again,
right,
in this budget. So we did get lots of stimulus money, and that now is gone. But we are a race to the top district, and so we're working in actually now year two of the race to the top program.
And what about the funding for that?
Yeah, that's grant funded. I mean, we write a grant for it and work through the Ohio Department of Education to make sure that we do the things that we need to do for that. And that's lots of professional development and again, trying to work on those standards and also work on the whole child. So, I mean, it's pretty much everything.
Thomas Tucker in Worthington City Schools, how do you you're talking about getting the kids excited to learn. There's so much focus on testing now. How do you balance the two and get them ready to take a test, which is a skill unto itself?
Absolutely. Again, if students are excited about learning, they're given authentic learning opportunities. And if those things are in place, kids are going to do well on the test. If you just look at achievement, as was discussed earlier, we met 26 out of 26 indicators and have consistently done that over the years. So if we continue to provide relevant, rigorous opportunities for our students, and they're excited. And I can talk about the great things that are happening in our regular classrooms, in our regular schools, but also the things that are happening at the Phoenix School, that those things have been, and activities
alternative
have been
junior high.
Absolutely,
mm-hmm.
Well documented, as well as Linworth Alternative School. Exciting real life things that have been going on in the Worthington City School District for years and years, in fact, over two decades right now. Those things are now have come to the forefront of what are good practices, both nationally and internationally in education.
How important is getting that with distinction?
If I ask many of our parents, and I've been deeply involved in our community over the last month and a half, it's not really a great part of the conversation, because they know that's going to come in time. Again, if I ask my parents, they're going to say to me, Thomas, I want to make sure our kids are excited about learning and that they are prepared to go on to higher ed as well as the world of work, really prepared and successful.
So when people are looking at the report cards or the scores and they're comparing it to other school districts, what's the difference between an Upper Arlington and a Worthington? Upper Arlington having the excellent with distinction.
Yeah, we can also say that. There are three other school districts in Franklin County that achieved the excellent with distinction. However, they did not meet all the indicators, and their performance index scores were lower than Worthington.
So it's not comparable. You have to look at everything.
No. We're worried about what's happening in the Worthington City School District. We're not only one of the best school districts in the state, but I think we're one of the best school districts nationally. And we'll take care of the work we need to do with the value-added growth. There are a few student groups that we're not growing the way that we should. And we have some really skilled folks here that will help all of our kids grow. So it's about ensuring our kids have opportunities to grow. And those school districts that have demonstrated that growth and have met AYP, we certainly applaud them.
Scott McKenzie, a lot of people are very critical of the test. They don't like the test. There's the Race to Nowhere documentary that a lot of people have seen. It frustrates people, but they still push their kids to succeed because that's what's out there now. How do you stay excited about education and still deal with all of this testing and all this measuring and quantifying?
Yeah.
In a standardized way.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And, you know, you worry about the testing a lot, but then you don't really worry about the testing a lot. You really worry about the kid, about the child. Groport Madison has over 50% of the students are economically disadvantaged. You know, we have lots of needs in Groport Madison, and I think we just really are excited about giving them the opportunities that we can give them. And that's, I think, the really thing that drives us in Groport Madison is the fact that we can work with those kids. We've got one in six students with an IEP.
Which Individual is, Education
yeah,
Plan.
Right, exactly. So that's, you know, one of the highest in Franklin County as well. And so there's lots and lots of work to be done. And I think our teachers are dedicated and They work very, very hard to, you know, reach the students and bring them as far as they can academically as well as you know, taking care of them as a whole student.
So what do you do at Groport Madison to celebrate getting an A?
Well, we had fireworks on a LCD display at our convocation. So we were pretty darn excited, and we sang the fight song, you know, that kind of stuff. So,
do the kids get it?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's still kind of sinking in. You know, we've done everything we can to let everyone know, but we're still kind of basking in it, I guess, if you will.
Well, congratulations. And Thomas Tucker, congratulations on your new job at Worthington City Schools.
Thank you, Ann.
And thanks for joining us today. My guest, Dr. Thomas Tucker, Superintendent of Worthington City Schools. Thanks for being with us. And also Scott McKenzie, Superintendent of Groport Madison City Schools. Thanks for being with us, Scott.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to talk about how we count dropouts or whether we count them at all and how we figure all that out at the federal and at the state level. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, bring your appetite for food in conversation. We begin a week of interviews about food and cooking with Chef Grant Achatz. He co-founded a Chicago restaurant famous for its avant-garde food. Achatz lost his sense of taste for a while after being diagnosed with tongue cancer. He's now in remission and has opened a new restaurant. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. This is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with Creative Education for Children with author and educator Mimi Chenfeld. Join us for that Hour of All Sides in 20 minutes. And you can join WOSU for a Chefs in the City Ohio beer tasting in the outdoor beer garden at the historic Granville Inn on September 14th. Local food hors d'oeuvres by Chef Chad Lavely will be paired with a selection of beers from four of Ohio's best breweries. Brewmaster Matthew Barbie from Lancaster's Rockmill Brewery will co-host this exclusive event. Tickets are on sale now for $45 each. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to reserve your tickets. Cloudy skies for this morning, becoming sunny this afternoon and a high of 78. Clear skies tonight, a low of 57. Sunny for Tuesday and a high of 82. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
If we're counting dropouts, shouldn't the states do it the same way? In 2008, the U.S. Department of Education required states to adopt the same formulas for counting dropouts. But in the final analysis, what does it really matter now? Joining us now to talk about graduation rates, which is the other side of the coin from dropouts, is Janine Molak. She is with the She's the Director of Accountability at the Ohio Department of Education. Welcome back, Janine.
Thank you.
Also with us is Elizabeth Grant. She's Special Assistant in the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education in the U.S. Department of Education. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So what's the difference between a graduation rate and a dropout rate? Elizabeth?
I'd be glad to take that. A graduation rate is capturing the number of kids who graduate from a school with a standard diploma. And the new rules that we are being instituted this year that all states have to report on are based on a new adjusted four-year cohort graduation rate that we can explain. But what it means is that we're tracking all of the students who start ninth grade and then all of those same students who graduate 4 years later. So that's the number of students who graduate. The flip side of that is your dropout rate, which is how many students then leave schooling between the ninth grade year and the end of the 12th grade year.
Who's responsible for following a student and tracking them?
Do you know, schools have the responsibility to track the students, and the new requirements put a different kind of responsibility on schools than they've had before, because they have to keep a written record of the students if they leave the school, if they transfer to a new school, if they move to another state, if they move out of the country, if they go into a homeschooling situation. The school from which the student leaves needs to keep a written record, and with that written record, then they would remove them from the group of ninth graders that they're counting because they've gone on to another educational program. If they don't have that written documentation, then they're unable to say whether the kid has left and gone to a new school or if the student has dropped out. And so that's the distinction and one of the important features of these new graduation rate measures.
In other words, if they can't verify where they've gone to, they have to count them as a dropout?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Is it because schools haven't been tracking kids in that way that so much the new way to do it is showing such a drop off from the old way?
Partly, yes. You know, partly in the main, most states have not had the data systems set up to be able to track kids over long periods of time. And in the last few years, states have put those into place, which has taken a lot of effort to create these systems that can give a unique identification number to a student in their school system and then be able to follow that student through the year. So as those systems have become more sophisticated, then we're able to get better numbers and they're able to track the students. Now, as those have gone into place, there are also these requirements that were really state-driven. I mean, the state, through the National Governors Association, recognized that there was a lot of variability across states, and so we weren't able to compare graduation rates across the different states. And so they all came together and said, you know, we need a better and more accurate number of how many kids are graduating. And so they implemented these new processes that were then put into federal regulations a couple of years ago. So I just wanted to say that I think on the whole, everybody's in agreement that these are good things to have. This is a good number to have and to track. And you're right that previously schools were doing all sorts of different things. One of the problems was that many kids, graduation rates were only dependent on who showed up for the senior year and who left in the senior year. So we were losing an understanding of the children who had dropped out in ninth grade or 10th grade or 11th grade. So this rate captures a much more accurate number for us and gives us a more honest picture of what's happening in our country.
My guest is Elizabeth Grant. She's Special Assistant in the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education in the U.S. Department of Education. Also with us is Janine Molak. She is Director of Accountability in the Ohio Department of Education. Questions or comments about graduation and dropout rates and how they're figured out, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Janine Molak, At this building level, schools are supposed to be tracking where their students go.
That is
the schools, though, with the least resources tend to have the ones with the most transients, which means they have to be tracking a lot more students, say, you know, at a lower wealth district than a higher wealth, because the transient, that's just a correlation between transient rates. But how do they manage it? It's not free.
Certainly, we did see that there seems to be a relationship between the amount of resources a district invests in keeping track of its students and how closely the new graduation rate mirrored the current calculation. We saw that there are definitely districts that have a highly mobile population within the state of Ohio that did a very good job of keeping track of their very mobile population. Akron is one that stands out. They actually saw a slight increase. But even within Columbus, Canton, there are several districts that we saw that their drop-off was consistent with what the state's average decline from the two rates was. So what you could conclude from that is that they have been doing, they've been putting in the effort and expending the time and keeping track of where students were going as they were moving through their systems. Certainly, we recognize that is a challenge. From the state's position, what we're doing is we're trying to give support through our data systems to say we have new elements where you identify where you believe they're moving to, and that district then will, that you're pointing to, we tell them, we believe these students are coming to you. And that way districts can converse with one another to see whether they're actually capturing the true pattern of mobility of the students that they serve.
Elizabeth Grant, nationwide, the dropout rates when this new standard is applied have increased. But that's not to mean we're swarming with dropouts. There aren't any more dropouts now than there were before.
That's right. We're just capturing the number better. You know, these numbers are important. They're showing us of 100 ninth graders who start school in that ninth grade year, how many of them reach the end. And nationally, we're seeing that just 75 out of 100 students who start ninth grade actually finish high school 4 years later. And for some groups of students, that number is even lower. You know, if a low-income student group, the number's in maybe the high 50s. So we're losing 35, 40 kids out of a cohort of students as they move from ninth grade to their senior year. And so it's been important for us to be able to capture that whole thing. But it also means, as you pointed out, that we aren't seeing huge rates of a huge growth in the number of kids who are dropping out. We're just more accurately measuring the number of kids who are dropping out.
And what's the goal?
The goal is to get every student on the path to a college and career. And that's the Department of Education's goal, and certainly what Secretary Duncan is fighting for across the country with state leaders and district leaders and school leaders. States have a long way to go that way, and the nation does too. So with a graduation rate of just 75%, we have a long way to go to get up into the 80s and 90s where we'd really like to be. But one of the things that this rate does that is important is it helps us better target support when we understand what's happening with these kids. You know, we can see if the kids are dropping out in ninth grade and create ninth grade intervention programs that support them and help in their transition from middle school to high school. So these sorts of things that we can see this trajectory and start to understand it better means that we're going to be better as educators in intervening when we need to and changing their pathways through school.
Forgive me if I got this wrong, but you're counting as graduation kids who graduate with a regular diploma.
That's right, and that's different too. And what a regular diploma means is it's a standard diploma that's aligned with each state's content standards. So the state of Ohio has decided what a regular diploma is in the state, and those kids who get that diploma are considered graduates. It's different in that previously some groups of students, particularly students with disabilities, were given an alternate diploma or a completion certificate. That no longer counts in these rates. Now, a state may still choose to provide those diplomas and may count them in their state rates, but for a federal accountability purposes, only this standard diploma applies. But let me mention, if I could, just one more thing,
sure.
And that is what we've instituted is a four-year rate, meaning we would like to see ninth graders complete high school in 4 years, so, of course, by their 12th grade year. But states can apply to use an extended year graduation rate so that you can capture how many kids graduate in 5 years or 6 years, which is a great thing for particularly serving the needs of students with disabilities who may take just one extra year to complete their credits. Or if schools are going to reengage kids who have dropped out and have missed a lot of course credits, then it allows the schools more time to get those kids back on track and completing the high school diploma. So states, a number of states across the country are picking this up. I imagine more may do so over time as we see these rates come out. But for federal accountability, they can use these extended year graduation rates.
Janine Molak, what does the state of Ohio do now?
I'm glad you asked. I've been waiting patiently. In Ohio, we intend to apply to the U.S. Department of Education to incorporate a five-year rate. It has been recommended by the State Board of Education to the General Assembly. And so that is what we're hoping to do. And for the reason that Elizabeth stated is that we want to give credit to those schools and districts that are persisting with students who take longer than 4 years to graduate. So there is an incentive to continue to persist with those, you know, students that don't get out in 4 years.
When you do that at the state level, does that mean all schools can count them? If that's approved, that all schools can count them that way?
Yes, we're hoping. We haven't yet, until we get some feedback from the U.S. Department of Education, we haven't talked about how we will incorporate it into the state system. Right now, one possibility is to look at allowing a district to meet either the 4 or the 5 year graduation rate goal. And that way they can meet the indicator.
How many kinds of diplomas are there? There's the regular diploma. What does Ohio call the regular diploma? What else, is that the only one you count?
We count both the regular and honors diploma in our graduation rate currently, and we plan to continue to do so for the new calculation. For example, GED students and those who complete with certificates are not in our current calculation. Neither will they be in our new calculation.
Why not? Is that because it's not allowed at the state level, Elizabeth Grant? I mean, at the federal level, Elizabeth Grant, or why? I mean, it shows some kind of completion.
It does, but what we're trying to get at is the standard completion that's aligned with the content standards. Do you know many states are implementing new college and career-ready standards? It's where we want all kids to be, ready to get into post-secondary education or training and move on successfully to a career. The difficulty with those other diplomas is that they didn't hit that mark. And so, you know, they're not invaluable diplomas. They're not invaluable certificates. They just don't hit the same mark. And what we're trying to encourage is a uniform rate across the country that's more comparable and that says to everybody across the country, the student who got this diploma is college and career ready.
Mort in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, hi. My question for your guest is, how many failures to graduate may be due to reading problems?
Do we have any sense about something like that, Janine, or do you, Janine Molak? Is there a correlation that you've noticed? Or
yeah, we have the research has shown that typically students who come to school very far behind in reading usually are those that are more likely not to complete high school, and certainly not to complete high school within 4 years of time upon entering ninth grade. So there seems to be in the research some evidence of that.
Thank you, Mort, for that call. Elizabeth Grant, what's the next step? You start accepting the new methodology next year, right?
For accountability purposes, mm-hmm. for when states report on their annual yearly progress, the AYP measure, that is based on next year's numbers that will come in at the end of the 2011-12 school year. This year, states are just required to report it. This is a new thing, and it's actually pretty complex to do. It puts a lot of responsibility on Janine there at the state level, but also on schools to make sure their systems are in place and are, we're tracking the students accurately, that the data systems are working. So in a sense, this year when states are reporting, it's a time for them to make sure that it's all aligned and working before the accountability kicks in next year.
I'm sorry, but transience isn't just an intrastate issue. It can be an interstate issue too, right, Elizabeth?
That's right, and that's going to be one of the more difficult things for states, is to be able to talk with each other. You know, parents are really helpful with this to say, hey, we're moving to such and such school district and wanted to let you know. And then schools have a much better chance of tracking down students. But it is more difficult. And migrant populations, you know, a lot of migrant workers, their children move a great deal and across states. And so tracking those students is difficult, too. We've implemented a migrant school information exchange system that's trying to help with some of that. But these systems need to get more sophisticated and be able to talk to each other to make it easier on states.
Just have a few seconds left, but Janine Molak, what's the greatest challenge for the state of Ohio at this point? What group of students are you the most worried about letting slip through the cracks?
I think we are worried about all students, to be quite honest. You know, it's not just the ones that we're seeing with the biggest dropout rates. Certainly, the African-American students have probably the biggest dropout rate, followed by probably American Indian and are economically disadvantaged students. Migratory students certainly is a problem. I guess we're concerned with all students.
Okay. Janine Molak, Director of Accountability in the Ohio Department of Education, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Also, Elizabeth Grant, Special Assistant in the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education in the U.S. Department of Education. Elizabeth, thanks for being with us today.
I appreciate the chance to be on. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.